and welcome to NextPod, VP NextGen's podcast made for veterinary students and young professionals who want to know what's next. I'm your host, Sarah Said, and this month we're going to be talking about ethics and how it fits into veterinary medicine for students and working professionals. Here to discuss this subject with us is Dr. Alice Villalobos, who specializes in veterinary oncology and who is also the president of the Society for Veterinary Medical Ethics. Valerie Adams will also join us, and she has been a veterinary technician slash nurse for many years, as well as Chloe Pham, a second year veterinary student at Cornell University. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So before we begin, I just want to ask a couple questions to each of you, very quick, nothing crazy, but I just want our listeners to be able to get a better understanding of who you are. So I guess first we can start with Dr. Villalobos, if that's cool. I just want to know, which college, university did you attend? Like, when did you graduate? And how did you get to where you are career-wise today, particularly within the ethics world?
Okay, I attended the University of California at UC Davis. I graduated from veterinary school in 1972, before most of you were born. And immediately upon my focus was always on cancer patients. And I had the good fortune to be mentored by one of the pioneering leaders in veterinary cancer medicine, and that's Dr. Gordon Thielen, who wrote the first two textbooks, which I helped edit a bit. And so as soon as I graduated, that's exactly what I did, as I went out and took care of pets with cancer. And over the years, it developed into an end-of-life care specialty, finding that there was a great need to help animals and their families when the pet is at end of life. There's a tremendous emotional burden that was not being met by the veterinary profession. Mm-hmm. So I've always been involved in ethical issues, you know, whether or not this pet has got cancer that's treatable or not treatable, whether we should, you know, can benefit the pet and do no harm. These are all ethical issues. And so along the way, ethics played a big part.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And I guess second person would be Valerie. What did you do to get to where you are today?
Well, I think I come from a long line of warrior women. That didn't hurt any at all. I graduated as a veterinary nurse technician in 1973. So when I first started out, I did large and small animal for quite a few years. From there, I segued to emergency critical care. And then I had the good fortune of finding my passion, which was end of life. And is how I got to know Dr. Villalobos. She was my mentor initially, getting my hospice and palliative care nonprofit off the ground. In the middle, the ethics came in quite a bit when I was doing equine rescue work. And I volunteer right now, which is where I was yesterday, on one of our Native American reservations, taking care of their dogs. And the ethics issues are not getting less. They are only increasing and changing with our society and where our human-animal bond is evolving. So that's a snippet of where I am today.
Thank you for that. That's awesome. Wow. And Chloe, how about you? What kind of made you interested in ethics, like as a student from that perspective?
Well, my journey in vet med has been so far much more brief than Dr. Villalobos and Valerie, but I'm hoping just as long. I graduated from undergrad with a degree in religious studies and cognitive science. And I think, that was kind of inspired by a longstanding interest I've had in, I think I didn't know at the time, but I was interested in kind of human community thoughts about what's right and what's wrong. And I think religious studies has a lot to do with that. And I realized soon after that actually vet medicine has a lot to do with that as well. So I'm very fortunate that my career decisions have gotten me here at my second year in vet school. And, you know, like Valerie, I am currently working in critical care at Cornell's Animal Hospital. And here I get to see every day, you know, lots of ethical dilemmas that clients have to grapple with their pets and with their family members. So that's kind of, you know, where I am now. And like I said, hopefully there's a lot to learn still from people like Dr. Villalobos and Valerie.
Yeah, of course. And that's really cool to see, you know, different people from different generations and different sides of vet med kind of coming together to talk about this, because ethics are, you know, everywhere for like any industry, but specifically in vet med, like it's really interesting to look at it through that lens, through the animal health lens. And, you know, now it's kind of, I'm kind of going to step back here and let Chloe ask Dr. Villalobos questions, because you have some really good ones. So you can go ahead whenever you want to start.
Okay, great. Hi, Dr. Villalobos. How are you?
I'm having a little bit of a sneeze attack, so excuse me.
Oh, no problem. Well, one of my first questions is what do you think is the most, or it could be a few things, it doesn't have to be one, but what do you think is a pressing ethical issue facing today's veterinary profession? And how do you think that these ethical issues are different from, you know, the ones that you considered when you first graduated from vet school?
Well, that's a big question, especially right now with how things have changed with COVID. So your question is, what is a pressing ethical issue in veterinary medicine? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
I think that when we begin to treat a patient, our most important consideration is that we do the best we can to benefit that patient and do no harm. So it's beneficence, and then we don't want to do anything we call malfeasance. So we don't want to harm the patient with our treatment, and we want to benefit the patient. And we always want to look at quality of life as being a very high priority, if not one of the most important priorities, and that we should never let ourselves subjugate quality of life for the treatments. We can deliver treatments and consider keeping the quality of life to a good standard that is really an important ethical issue.
Yeah, thank you so much. And how do you think that's changed at all since when you first graduated from vet school?
No, I think these are steadfast goals that don't change. You know, they're prioritize benefiting patients and prioritizing not harming the patient. These are all things that it is justice for the animal being treated. So those don't change.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And, you know, hopefully, 40, 50 years from now, vets are still saying that it's a pressing ethical issue. But hopefully we'll make some progress. And anyway, my second question was, if there's a specific pet or person who's had a profound impact on your perspective on veterinary ethics?
Well, I think that I could go back to my mentor, Dr. Gordon Thielen, who wanted to embrace the pets with cancer and treat them and take care of them and help them gain remissions, while his colleagues were feeling that the whole area of chemotherapy is to be avoided, They thought that it was that he was harming animals with chemotherapy. And basically, Dr. Thielen showed and demonstrated quite clearly, no, many patients could handle it and they could come back to get further treatments and survive longer with a good quality of life. So that is watching him stand up for his principles and for what he knew and understood and felt was a goal in his dreams was inspiring to me. So I have to say it was Dr. Gordon Thielen who inspired me tremendously. And then you could say it's the patients because they, you know, like if we had a dog with lymphoma and he came in with big lymph nodes and those lymph nodes would shrink and the patient would feel better. These are very inspirational. And so this is what, you know, I'd say my two sources.
Yeah, you know, I think your second inspiration, you know, the patients. It's funny, we see patients every day. So we have an endless source of inspiration to keep doing good by them. So I relate to that a lot. Do you think that, you know, your perspective on ethics has changed in any way since you graduated from school? Or like, do you think like you've learned something kind of unexpected about regarding ethics throughout your career?
I'd have to say that ethics is sort of kind of like a steady principle. It's a strategy that is unwavering, just like someone's religion. It doesn't change with the decade or the era. I think that at times people feel that it's more important to stick to an ethical principles than at another time, but the principles remain the same. They've always been the same, and that is to create benefit at the same time to not harm the patient and to do what is just and fair for the animal. And the human-animal bond to always hold in high regard as a very important relationship that is worthy of our time and our sacrifice to preserve.
Yeah, and you know, I like as a follow-up question, one of the ways that we learn about ethics, at least so far during my time in school, has been a lot of the ethical challenges that we come upon have to do with maybe sometimes competing interests between different stakeholders, the patient and the client, and sometimes even like the veterinary profession. So for instance, you know, there's a client who loves their pet dearly and is having a hard time saying goodbye. And as a veterinary professional and an expert in your field, you know that, you know, perhaps the animal is suffering maybe a bit more than the client realizes or maybe wants to acknowledge. Do you find that you come upon these instances often, especially, you know, with your work in oncology?
Yes, this particular problem occurs so frequently. And many reasons is the family doesn't realize how the patient, their pet, has declined over time because it's often a very slow decline. And the family, you know, doesn't understand the impact of losing quality of life for their pet. And I developed a quality of life scale that went viral all over the world. And it's got five H's and two M's for immediate recall. And the five H's stand for hydration, no hunger, no hygiene issues, and happiness. A lot of people were surprised that I put happiness in this. but it's really important. And then mobility, and then more good days and bad days. If an animal's experiencing all bad days, you know, one after the other after the other, quality of life is just not really worth living for that particular patient. So my goal in developing this quality of life scale, and it's on my website at pospis.com, was to help people use this as a guideline to help them make decisions at end of life, and to ask their veterinarian to help them help their pet transition over the rainbow bridge, which I like to use these words to help people not feel like they're killing their dog, because they often blame themselves, and people are too hard on themselves regarding end of life issues. So I have these terms that help the person understand what they're really doing when they're helping a pet that has a loss of quality of life, that is no longer the case where the pet's life is worth living, that the family will help him transition with the help of a veterinarian and the process of a bond-centered euthanasia. And euthanasia means well death.
I'm going to jump in here just for a minute in this conversation, if I could, and say that I spent time with Dr. Villalobos and attending her practices and consults with her. And I think one of the things that impressed me the most, and I carry with me today and pass on as much as I can, is the fact that Alice, in her practice, walked alongside her families so that when it came time to say goodbye, and it always did come time to say goodbye, always, they were not in such a state of shock, because they had had a professional who had walked alongside of them the whole way. So while it was deeply emotional, deeply moving, deeply sorrowful, the guilt, the regret, all of that seemed to dissolve fairly easily because of how Dr. Villalobos had created the culture that they were going to be losing this pet eventually. And it was absolutely magic to me. So when we went home, when I came home and put everything together for our hospice and palliative care group and delivered that care, those were things that I took with me from what I had learned from her. So those ethical dilemmas smoothed right out.
Yeah, that's such an awesome point that you can kind of bring your own experience into it, just seeing Dr. Villalobos like in action and seeing how what she's saying has really truly changed the way that you're obviously seeing vet med, but as well as like people's lives, the patient's lives or the owner's life. So yeah, it's really awesome to hear that. Thank you so much, Chloe, for your questions. That was awesome. I definitely learned a lot, and I will continue to learn a lot. But yeah, Valerie, if you don't mind continuing, I know you also have questions. So go whenever.
I do. And I guess I had already kind of segued to that and didn't even know it. I was so swept up in your conversation with Chloe, because I think it was such an important piece that you did for me, Alice. I wondered how did you ever, was it a conscious effort to keep ethics in your oncology practice? Or did you just kind of, was it just embedded in and second nature?
I believe it was embedded and it became second nature. And when I first started practice in 1972, there was really no definition of an ethics society or, you know, no formal organization promoting the outline of what ethics really is, what it was be like. And so over the years, just trying to make the right decision or the best decision, you can't say it's right, but the very best decision under the given circumstances for patients with many times severe diseases and complications caused me to practice with that whole ethical approach, you know, that I would do no harm and do the best I could to benefit my patients. And so when I first was invited to give a talk at an ethics society meeting, I was thrilled to find this organization had started in, I believe, in 1996 by doctors who were very interested in you know, formalizing the concept of ethics in veterinary medicine, medical ethics.
Yes, and I really do want to mention, thank you for keeping the ethics, the foundation of ethics you brought forth a couple of different times. And I thought that was worthy of noting also, in that we are going to have societal changes and human-animal bond evolutions. But at the bottom, what I heard you say is that the foundation of ethics is always going to be there, and that will be steady.
Right. And the human-animal bond has evolved in the last 50 years. You know, people have become far more attached to their pets than they used to be. You know, and in the old days, it was fairly utilitarian to have a horse that would take you from point A to point B. And then as time got on, people had dogs and cats in their homes and other animals that they really, really became very fond of and worked up a two-way beneficial relationship. And the human-animal bond took a form that became part of who we are now. So often, you know, we meet people who their most important relationships that they have are the relationships they have with their pets. Either usually a dog or a cat or a horse or an animal that they spend quite a lot of time with. And that animal helps the people bring them closer to nature and closer to their spirituality. So the human-animal bond has become even more prioritized in the last year since COVID required that we'd go into isolation. And so often the most important relationship that we had that on a consistent basis was a relationship that we have with our animals. And so I'd have to say that COVID has even further elevated the importance of the human-animal bond.
What do you think these young professionals that are just starting out, given the fact that the human-animal bond has evolved the way it has, where do you see some of the very specific ethical challenges for young professionals today?
Well, I believe that the ethical challenges for younger veterinarians early on for them will be to respect the relationship that people have with their pets. I think in the old days when we had doctors that were still working in the utilitarian philosophy of usefulness of an animal like a horse, they didn't really appreciate and understand how deep the human-animal bond is. And some new doctors also have the same lack of experience and appreciation for how deep and important the human-animal bond is.
Tell me some resources for these young professionals that they can reach for. And that's a broad question.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. but I think a lot of times I'm always looking to give them tools. What kind of tools will help them? Because I'm not sure they're getting all the tools they need in their formal education that a veteran such as yourself would be able to give them.
So you're asking me if I can point younger doctors to sources of understanding the human-animal bond. Is that your question?
I think that's a good start, because I don't know how much human-animal bond in depth that they're getting in their formal education. So much has to get packed in such a short period of time. And, you know, that deeper cultural human-animal bond dynamic that we're experiencing now, I think is worthy of them doing a little deeper dive into preparing for their real life.
Yes, and I think so far as sources are concerned, I think people, all we have to do is look on the internet and look in at different stories that people have about, like, those who want to, who are traveling across the United States with an animal, dog, cat, horse. But often we see the depth of the human-animal bond by someone's story. When they report their ideas, their viewpoints, their inspiration, and as they're watching and observing their companion animal, they become inspired and understand that this is a being, this is another being that has a tremendous importance and presence. And so this is a powerful realization for people to bring to others. And when others get that, I think that they are also inspired.
Great. Tell us some, if you are pondering, you're having some sort of an ethical dilemma within your practice, what kind of tools did you use to work yourself through that to help you, which in order then would be helping your family and, of course, the family's pet?
Almost all of the ethical dilemmas that I had experienced were end-of-life care issues, and also whether or not we would continue treating a patient that seemed to be coming out of remission or showing resistance. So if the oral tumor recurred after a period of time of some control, maybe 6 months or more, do we do another surgery and do add radiation to that? That would be an ethical question. Mm-hmm. And based upon the literature, because there are articles that would tell you what kind of tumor we're dealing with, and you know how radiation would, you know, control one type of tumor and not another. So based upon these facts and what we call evidence-based medicine, we can make ethical decisions for our patients. And always during the time that they're getting the treatment, our goal would be to maintain good quality of life.
And of course, alongside of that is wonderful palliative care.
Absolutely. Palliative care is considered care that's given many times after we make the decision not to treat the primary tumor, but I'm trying to introduce palliative care to become an overall reaching to improve quality of life, no matter what stage of treatment the patient is in, whether he's being treated aggressively or with a second or third option treatment, or whether the patient is being treated as what we call a hospice patient that is not going to receive definitive care anymore, definitive treatments. So palliative care is, I like you to think about it, the word pal is in it. And that's why I love this word, that we're taking care of our pal so that they feel better.
I remember you telling me that. So I'm gonna ask your personal opinion on something.
Sure.
What do you, the Society for Veterinary Medical Ethics is something that really turns me on. I'm that kind of a person, though, and it sounds like Chloe is also. But it's one of those groups that ethics just seems to be like off on the periphery. And I'm wondering, why do you think that is?
Well, I don't know if it really is. It may appear to you that way. It's just because the doctors who are involved in the SVME are grounded and based in ethics. And so I think they're operating to help the organization survive and to multiply. And so often enough, it turns into organizational issues. Yet ethics is certainly the grounds, the ground that holds everyone together. So I'm hoping that answers your question.
Well, what I'm encouraged with, and I say this too for Chloe, is that there is now what I'm encouraged with, and you probably are too, is there is a student branch now of the SVME.
Yes.
So with the infusion of younger generations, I'm hoping they will be bringing this up to the forefront. I don't see ethics as taking a sideline to anything, number one. And number two, going forward, I see it coming to the forefront in many different ways. How about you?
No, I totally agree that ethics itself as a primary, principle is not going to be changing. But, you know, definitely when you have an organization that you're trying to increase membership to and increase exposure to, you need to have all those mechanisms in place. And so that's why you might think that we haven't held ethics to the high level of focus that you were thinking would be. But, you know, we do have to multitask, so to speak.
I like the fact that the student population now is getting involved with it.
Yes.
Because I also see as medicine, as healthcare moves forward and we find more and more ways of extending life, we're going to have to be looking at quality of life even more. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. We're able to keep many patients with us for a lot longer than we thought. And just look at an older animal. Maybe it had one primary problem, but as we've maintained that patient over 2 or 3, 4 years, they have developed what we call concurrent problems. For instance, a typical would be arthritis, heart disease, and maybe a metabolic disease. And so these compound the treatment for the primary problem, which might've been a tumor, a cancer issue. So we have ethical concerns because not only are we dealing with the primary problem, but the patient now has more what we call comorbidities. You know, they're fighting, all of them are fighting for attention. And they're all really also potentially causes for that patient to die. And so comorbidities are things that we need to focus on as well and handle together in conjunction with the whole program for the patient.
Yes, great, thank you. That was exactly what I was looking for, Alice. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for all your questions and even your answers. I mean, I'm kind of like so amazed whenever I hear about ethics, especially in vet med, because it really connects to so much. You know, obviously there's actual medicine involved, but as well as, soft skills and things that people need to develop that you wouldn't necessarily learn like in a classroom sitting down and taking notes, right? So I think it's really cool to have these conversations, especially with the young people. Yeah. So I just want to say thank you. And before we kind of end the podcast, we always do like a little Q&A, I guess you could say, for our speaker. And I want to do it with all three of you, but I'm going to kind of cut it shorter and just ask you one main important question. And then the other one will just be if you could tell us, you know, where could people find you, like email, social media, website, if they ever want to reach out or just follow what you're up to. So my first question, and I will ask you first, Dr. Villalobos, is do you have a quote or like a philosophy that you live by that inspires you on the regular?
Well, I think one word, and I did name my practice, or one of my practices, hospice. It's a new word, and because it means, you know, for the PAW, end of life care, that word opens up a tremendous amount of veterinary medicine and compassionate care and the whole concern for quality of life at the end of life. And so that's the word I would like to pass on is hospice. Hopefully that word will not die with my retirement, but be looked upon favorably by our profession.
That's awesome. Thank you. And where can people find you if they want to just keep up with what you're doing or reach out?
Well, I have the website called Pawspice, PAWSPICE.com. And, you know, since my retirement, I'm not really engaging in consultations, but I do have a good website and I will occasionally update it if there's something exciting going on.
Awesome. Thank you so
much. Yeah, my quality of life scale is on that website as well. People can download that directly from the website.
Cool. That sounds like an awesome resource. Thank you. And my question now goes to you, Valerie. What's your quote or philosophy?
Well, you know, I stick real close to my Paulo Coelho quote about not all storms come to disrupt. Some come to clear the path. And I've been fearless by nature throughout my incredible passion for veterinary medicine. And even at this age, I've got a birthday coming up in a few weeks. I can't shake it. And I'm always looking for ways to bridge this gap. This is wonderful. And I want to see more of this because there are so many great pioneers, myself included, who have walked the road and are so interested in nurturing the and fanning this flame of passion in veterinary medicine for young professionals. I want to, as a veterinary nurse technician graduating in its conception almost, I'd still like to be around to contribute and inspire and bridge the gap with communication for younger generations, because I was mentored well when I was first starting out. I would like to do that for others. You can come and see me at confidesinanimals.com. That's my blog. I'm on LinkedIn and I'm a advisor for you folks there at VP Next Gen.
Yeah, you are. And yes, you definitely are doing that. You're definitely passing on a lot of your great advice and mentorship towards us and all of our listeners, and I'm sure many other professionals that you interact with on the regular. So thank you. Thank you for doing that.
I love it.
Yeah, no, it's so awesome. And, you know, it's also great for me because I'm not a veterinarian or a technician or a vet student or any of those things. Just to see, you know, how different people can kind of come together to really provide like really important information. So yeah, every time I hear you all talking and stuff, it makes me very excited for the future, for all the generations to come. And speaking of the future, Chloe, what is your quote or like philosophy that kind of keeps you going every day?
I think I just try my best to live in close alignment with my values. And sometimes that's hard. But as you know, Dr. Villalobos and Valerie, they're such great examples of doing just that. And, you know, I hope that as someone who, you know, I'm very optimistic about the future of veterinary medicine and ethics in veterinary medicine. And I know that there's still a lot to learn, but I'm, you know, very hopeful that we're going to see a lot of really great progress in my generation and hopefully the generations to come. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, people like Dr. Villalobos and Valerie have really, you know, paved the way for us. And it was so great to speak with you, Dr. Villalobos. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
And actually, fun fact, I'm pretty sure I learned about your metric for assessing quality of life in class. So that's very cool to speak with the inventor.
Good.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much, Chloe and Valerie and Dr. Villalobos for this great conversation. You know, we really appreciate you being with us. And we also want to give a big thank you to our NextPod listeners. Remember, you are the future. Join us next month for another in-depth talk.